Do I start now?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. If you're a first-time listener and you love dogs as much as I do, you'll soon discover that every Thursday morning you can attend a free class all about dogs just by tuning in and listening to us for 30 minutes each week from 10 to 10:30. If you missed any shows that we've done or you want to hear a program again, my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, has a page where you can listen to all past programs just by clicking on the links for each podcast. Those podcasts are listed on the page marked Rini's Radio Show. We've covered a variety of topics, many about dog behavior problems, safety issues, health concerns, the sport of agility, and a lot more. I sincerely hope that you'll develop a really good habit of listening to us on a regular basis, and your dog will appreciate it too. My guest today is Phil Arkow. Phil teaches a class at Camden County College on animal-assisted therapies and activities. He's also co-authored a book entitled Child Abuse, Domestic Violence, and Animal Abuse, Linking the Circles of Compassion for Prevention and Intervention. We'll be talking a lot about animal abuse today, especially as it relates to children exposed to domestic violence or who have witnessed animal abuse. Before we talk to Phil, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338. We're on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338. We're on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. We have Phil Arkow on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Rini. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. It's been several years, but I'm glad that we'll have the chance to talk again about this very important and very complicated issue as far as I'm concerned. Isn't it true that at one time animal abuse was taken pretty lightly in our society?
Yeah, it's always been considered marginal, and you know, people always have the attitude of, oh, it's only a dog, or it was only a squirrel, what's the big deal? Well, boys will be boys, and even today, animals are legally considered property. Law enforcement officers just, you know, don't feel like dealing with it. They'd rather turn it over to animal control, and animal control officers aren't put in the same regard as regular law enforcement officers. So most people still don't treat animal abuse and cruelty and neglect with the degree of seriousness that it really deserves. And that's why this whole issue of what we call the link is so important, because it's getting people more aware of how serious animal cruelty, abuse, and neglect are, and how, in fact, it's a human welfare issue as well as an animal welfare issue. And a number of national organizations are working in this arena and bringing it to much greater public attention.
Have you seen?
And worldwide.
Okay. And so, when did this attention start to, how long has it been since you've really been paying more attention to this issue? Are you seeing any improvements at all?
We are seeing some great legislative changes. I'll talk a little bit about some things going on in New Jersey right now. But, you know, it's been an age-old issue. We've been talking about it since the 13th century, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And it was a real huge issue in the 19th century. Victorian literature is just filled with references to it. But we really began scientific study of it back in the 1970s and 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a great deal of research now. We're seeing a lot of legislative initiatives. We're seeing public awareness, we're seeing community education programs, and we're seeing community humane and human services agencies getting together and working together to take a comprehensive approach towards the prevention of all forms of family violence, which includes the four-legged members of the family.
Which includes what? I didn't catch that.
Including the four-legged members of the family.
Okay, all right.
What most people don't realize is how many there are. I mean, in New Jersey, for example, we've got 8.7 million people in the state, but that we also have 1.2 million dogs and 1.7 million cats.
Holy moly. That's
and
quite, they, that's
and 98% of people consider pets to be either companions or members of their families.
Absolutely. I know I do.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who's listening to this certainly does.
I'm sure. What is it that makes children become violent toward animals? And at what age do you normally see this?
Well, there are a lot of different reasons. It starts showing up as early as 6.5 years of age. And researchers have found that childhood cruelty to animals is one of the earliest and most significant predictors of conduct disorder. So it's one of the first signs of a child headed down the road to trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many different reasons why a child will hurt animals, as there are why an adult will hurt other people.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, kids are taking out the aggression that's been directed at them. In many cases, they are just emulating. They're repeating the abusive behaviors they've seen in their family.
Mm-hmm.
They will do gang initiation rites. We've seen teenagers torture animals and videotape it because they're bored and they want to be able to watch the videos later.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are just a lot of different complicated reasons. There's no one simple explanation.
This is really sad and very disturbing. Is it mostly boys, or do you also see this in girls?
Mostly boys. It's very, very gender-specific. I mean, there are girls who commit these atrocities as well, but mostly it's boys.
Okay. So is it wrong to ignore a child's behavior if that child is abusive to animals?
No, absolutely not. But the question I'm always asked is, well, gee, does every boy who pulls the wings off of flies or catches a moth in a jar, are they going to grow up to become another Jeffrey Dahmer?
Mm.
The answer is no. Some of this is just innocent childhood exploration. Some of it is kids just not knowing anything different. But at some point, you know, it's going to vary on a case-by-case basis what that point is. At some point, that child needs some psychological intervention. He needs some counseling. He needs some help.
Mm-hmm.
What we say is that, you know, any child who has a real interest in harming animals,
mm-hmm.
and any case in which it's repeated, any case in which it's persistent, any case in which it's lacking in remorse or restraint, or any case in which they're attacking many different kinds of animals or repeating the incidents.
Mm-hmm.
These are situations that definitely warrant intervention.
Mm-hmm. So can you give us a brief list of what are some of the ways that children do abuse animals?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to, scare your readers or your listeners or gross them out, but I mean, we see kids, setting animals on fire.
Mm-hmm.
We see them putting them into trash bags and beating them to death with clubs.
Mm-hmm.
We see them shooting them. We've seen them skinning animals alive. We see kids going to dog fights. I mean, it's a whole range of atrocities.
Mm-hmm. The dog fighting is a very big problem, I just heard something on the news last week. I think it might have been a local news station stating that even since the Michael Vick issue, the dog fighting has actually increased in Philadelphia. So I don't know if this is ever going to go away. It just seems to be now, let's try it. They're curious, and so they want to try it, or they want to get involved with it because they think they're going to make a lot of money, and involving the children because they think that that's a pretty cool way of, of bonding with their own kids.
There was a case in Kankakee, Illinois several months ago that was brought to my attention. There's a huge anti-dog fighting police effort in Chicago. And they've done a pretty good job of getting a lot of the dog fighters out of Chicago. I mean, they haven't stopped it completely. We found that that the American Humane Association, for example, we had a report a couple years ago that 31% of teenagers in Chicago have been to a dog fight.
31%?
31%, yeah. It's absolutely astounding. And I suspect in Philly it's not much better. But So they're moving out of the city and they're going into the suburbs of Chicago. And I suspect the same thing's happening in Philly. They're heading over to Jersey or the Pennsylvania suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one case in Kankakee, Illinois, in which the police did a raid on the dog fight, and they arrested a guy because it got a 6-year-old kid at the dog fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's not only charged with dog fighting, but also endangering the welfare of the minor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is disturbing. I have to tell you, I'm sitting here and I get goosebumps when I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, and I remember also, I don't know if it was about a year ago or even, there was something on the news and they even showed it. This poor cat, somebody had wrapped duct tape around the entire cat. I think the cat survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, duct tape seems to be a particular weapon of choice. And it's not just with kids, but there's another whole dimension of this. This is the case where animals are harmed as a weapon in domestic violence. And there was a case in New York just a few months ago of a guy duct taping the cat to the refrigerator. What often happens is that the batterer, who's usually a male, not always, but usually, harms the animal or threatens the animal, and uses it to tell his human victim, who's usually a woman, if you leave or if you do anything, I'll kill your animals.
Mm-hmm.
Or I killed your rabbit, I can do it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the human victim is living in a state of terror. She's afraid to leave. So there's nobody to care for her animal. And so what we're seeing are a tremendous number of programs going up in which women's shelters are working with animal shelters, veterinarians, and animal rescue groups to provide foster care for the animals so that the women can flee. And in a few cases, we're seeing great interest in what we call the PAWS program. This is something started by American Humane, in which we're helping women's shelters build kennels on the site of the women's shelters.
So that these women can still have a connection with their own animals?
They can bring their animals with them when they
go
to the state.
Wow, that's wonderful. Good. That's really good. That's good work. What are the possible consequences to the child if his abusive behavior isn't taken seriously?
Probably Margaret Mead said it better than anybody 50 years ago. She said, the worst thing that can happen to a child is to harm an animal and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they become desensitized to violence. They begin to think that, violence is the best way to resolve all conflict.
Mm-hmm.
They see they can get away with it. And they just continue on a path of either hurting animals or, in worst cases, escalating and moving on to harming people.
Mm-hmm. The last time we spoke about this several years ago, I have always remembered something that you said, and correct me if I'm wrong or if this has changed, but I believe that you told me that all of the most famous serial killers were known to abuse animals as children?
Not all of them, but a very high percentage of them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was something that was overlooked and excused, and the boys will be boys. But when they went back in and did some studies later, they found it was just really this huge common denominator in the lives and the criminal patterns of most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very serious indicator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. So, you mentioned that in Chicago, they've had a big improvement in getting rid of the dog fighting. How did they do that, and why don't cities throughout the country start looking at what Chicago has accomplished?
Because the courts, the district attorney's offices, the law enforcement agencies still think, oh, it's only an animal, and they think it's a minor crime. They don't realize that. Well, what Chicago found was, after a lot of study, that it's a combination of guns, gangs, and drugs, and they all go together and they circle around dogfighting.
Mm-hmm.
So, as much as they wanted to, they didn't really care about the dogfighting as much as they wanted to crack down on the guns and the gangs and the
mm-hmm.
drugs,
mm-hmm.
and so it all just kind of got wrapped together.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing some progress. I mean, Philadelphia, for example, Los Angeles, a number of other cities actually now have people in their district attorneys in the prosecutor's offices who are specifically charged with animal cruelty cases. And that's the main focus of responsibility, because there are so many of these cases coming up. So we are starting to see some movement there.
Okay. I was actually surprised after Michael Vick was convicted that he's, you know, I mean, he went to Leavenworth, I believe, and his sentence was pretty severe, although, you know, I don't think he served the entire sentence out. But so does that tell us that, that the law is looking more sternly at dog fighting and animal abuse?
I think so. I mean, you can argue all you want as to whether he should have gotten more of a sentence or less of a sentence, and I don't know that we'll ever resolve that issue. And everybody, it's a lightning rod. I mean, it brought a lot of people together. We consider Michael Vick the O.J. Simpson of dog fighting.
Yeah.
He really brought it to national attention. It has really been underground, and you know, only the animal welfare advocates have been talking about it for years. But suddenly, you know, it was now a celebrity involved with this.
Right.
And of course, it was right in our backyard, so you know, we've got a double barrel approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that it's been an issue for years. It was mostly a rural issue. It was mostly done out in the country, down south, out in the Midwest. But in the last two decades, probably, it's moved into inner city and urban areas, and it's now very widespread in densely populated inner city areas, that you know, mark areas like the East Coast.
Right. So the law. What is so? Suppose a child is, reported for abusing an animal. If I call the police and my neighbor has a son who has done something horrendous and I see that and I call the police, so I'm not going to get much satisfaction from them, am I?
Well, it may involve having to remind the police officers that it is a crime. It's no different than any other crime. And like any other crime, you need specific details. You need the time, the place, who the participants were. You need witnesses. You need evidence. It's going to go to court like any other potential crime, and you've got to work within the confines of the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of juveniles, it's often a case of counseling and education may be better than punishment. We have a number of states in which people who are convicted of animal cruelty have to undergo either anger management or counseling programs, and there are counseling programs available for children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a complex issue. We're working on something right now at the American Humane Association on guides for parents and teachers on what to do with this and when these issues are brought up in classrooms or teachers or counselors or mm-hmm. parents have to communicate with animal cruelty.
Right. And go ahead.
We've been working on similar ideas with the Latham Foundation for many years.
With the what foundation? I can't hear you.
Yeah, it's the Latham Foundation, L-A-T-H-A-M.
Okay.
It's been around since 1918 to do humane education.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on teaching children to be kind animals, so this is an area that we're particularly involved with. And
good.
Particularly trying to help improve kids' behavior there, too.
You did mention that, something about punishment. And look, I work with aggressive dogs, so working with aggressive children must be the same thing. You cannot punish this out of a child. You can't punish it out of a dog or an animal, the aggression. So can these children actually be rehabilitated, or can they get to an age where that would be a slim chance?
Yes and no. Again, it's the same thing as any other type of behavior modification program in children. It took them a long time to get there. It's not going to change overnight.
Mm-hmm.
The secret is to try to instill in them a sense of empathy and begin to have them recognize that their victims have feelings. And again, whether the victim has two legs or four legs,
mm-hmm.
it's often a matter of convenience and opportunity as much as anything else.
Right.
For any of us to learn empathy and learn to see the world through somebody else's eyes mm-hmm. is a huge step forward.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly with children who developmentally may not be there yet or who haven't had opportunities to get those kinds of lessons, it's a huge challenge and it isn't going to happen quickly.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine, trying to put myself into a child's place emotionally, if I was an abused child, I think that my reason for abusing an animal would make me feel like I had some kind of power in my life, something that I could predict that I could succeed at to counter the effect of constantly being abused myself. Do you think
that is That is exactly right. All forms of violence, and we see this certainly in domestic violence, and we see it in animal cruelty as well, are issues of power and control.
Mm-hmm.
And children are looking for some sense of power, trying to gain some sense of control when the world around them is not giving them those opportunities. And they often take those opportunities to gain power in very unhealthy ways.
Right. So can the average person contribute to helping children like this in any way, even if they don't see it? Is there something that people can do for children to prevent this behavior?
Absolutely. Parents should, pressure their school districts and their kids' classes into having humane education lessons in the classroom. And many SPCAs and humane groups in the region, offer those kinds of services. And we've got national curricula available, again, through American Humane and the Latham Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They should always take the opportunity when they see a child who's harming animals to teach the child the correct behavior. In many cases, children just model whatever behavior their parents do.
Mm-hmm.
And they grow up thinking, well, my pappy always did this, my pappy always hunted squirrels, I can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
Or, my pappy always drowned cats in the creek, we can do it too. So they just have to learn that, there are inappropriate behaviors. And it's the same as any other inappropriate behavior. It's a case of guiding them and using positive reinforcement, the same way we do with teaching adults.
Right, and children, they look to role models, and so if they think that their father or their uncle or their neighbor is taking them, is somebody to look up to, that's another reason I think kids could get into it, whether they're abused or not. If somebody that they like and they respect is doing something like this, then how in the world would they ever think that they're doing something wrong? At that age, they wouldn't recognize that as being wrong.
Absolutely. It is a case of having good positive role models. Yeah.
Right. But tell us a little bit about your book. Give everybody the title of it again, please, and tell them where they can get it.
Well, actually, I've got several books. One was published by the Latham Foundation. It's a book and a video called Breaking the Cycles of Violence. And that's available on the Latham website. It's latham.org. And that's a brief manual and a video for social service and human service agencies and animal welfare agencies to help them understand what this link thing is all about and how they can come together and work together through cross-reporting, through cross-training, and through taking a more holistic approach to the prevention of family violence.
Mm-hmm.
The longer book was also underwritten by the Latham Foundation, and it's got a huge title. It's called Child Abuse, Domestic Violence, and Animal Abuse, Linking the Circles of Compassion for Prevention and Intervention. It was published by Purdue University Press. And that was a compilation of 45 essays by 50 leading experts in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Again, addressing the same thing about the many different aspects of animal abuse and how it impacts human violence.
Okay. Wonderful. So, and you also teach a class at Camden County College. Tell us a little bit about that class.
Yeah, I actually teach two courses in animal-assisted therapy. One's for the South Jersey community at Camden County College, but one's a distance learning class, and podcast listeners might be interested in this. We have students all over the world. And these are programs that train people who think they have animals that they'd like to take out to visit nursing homes and hospitals or work in some kind of a healthcare field with their pets, and learn the right ways to do these interventions and get the training and the certification that they need that they can conduct this program.
Do you work closely with Therapy Dogs International and Delta Organization?
I work with TDI and ADI and Bright and Beautiful and Delta and any of the various groups that are out there.
Wonderful, wonderful. You know that I do CGC classes, Canine Good Citizen, which is a first step toward doing that, and so you and I seem to be doing some similar things out there.
Absolutely, yeah. The CGC test is usually where most people start because it's one of the easiest ways to get a pet into a therapy program. It's an excellent program, absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of shelter dogs, too, that are becoming therapy dogs, and that's wonderful. I just love hearing things like that.
I do, too. I mean, my background is animal shelters, and I spent many years taking shelter animals out, visiting nursing homes and hospitals and rehab centers and
Right, right. So that's great. So in your classes at Camden County College, do they, do the people come with their dog?
Yeah.
Oh, they do come with their dog.
They're welcome, and they bring them in. It's a way for them to test to see how their animals would behave in a group environment. And then one class, we bring an evaluator in from the Delta Society, and she does a dry run and a testing.
Oh, good.
To run through to see if the animals would pass the test, and if not, what they need to do to study up for it.
Wonderful. And how long is the class? I mean, how many weeks does it go?
It's 12 weeks. We meet on Saturday morning.
Okay.
Let me give you my website. There
Absolutely.
Was some more information about this.
Sure.
It's at ArcoPet. Animaltherapy.net. www.animaltherapy, all one word, .net.
Okay.
Information there both about the Camden County and the Hartman College business learning courses.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting because along these lines, I have an interview next Thursday morning at 10 o'clock with a woman by the name of Sharon Saxon. She's written a book called Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. And I read her book, and it was a very moving book. It was a lot of different stories about dogs that have contributed greatly to healing people who were either emotionally, disturbed, or they had problems because of abusive backgrounds, interestingly enough. There were stories in there about dogs who were adopted from shelters to people who had seizure disorders, and these dogs were just naturally inclined to alert their owner that they were going to have a seizure. And so dogs are incredible, the power that they have to heal people and the power that they have to make people's lives better is just incredible.
I think it was Roger Karras who said that dogs aren't our whole lives, but they make our lives whole.
Don't they? Don't they really? I just think that it's just a wonderful, I'm blessed because, I mean, all my life, I always wanted a dog as I grew up, and I wasn't allowed to have one. And I remember when my parents would go visit family members or friends, and they would take me with them, the first question that I would ask is, do they have a dog? And if they did, they wouldn't see me for the entire visit because I'd be there playing with the dog. And so when I got married, I got my first dog only 36 years ago, and it's been onward and upward ever since then, you know. And so I'm very, very blessed to even have gotten into this field myself, which was totally unexpected because I got a dog that was very problematic, and I didn't know a thing about what I was supposed to be doing with him. And so rehabilitating that dog got me into training, and I'm a lucky woman to be able to be doing this, and I'm sure that at times you feel equally as blessed being in this field yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I stumbled into it by accident. I was a newspaper reporter and wound up working for a humane society, and I thought, well, this is fun. I'll stay here till the next newspaper job comes along, and 35 years later, I'm still in the business.
Isn't that amazing? I think
Yeah. Some
things are meant to be. I really do. I mean, look at all the help you're giving out there. Look at what you're contributing to the community with of animals, and I feel the same way. So, you know, I think that it's just wonderful, and I can't thank you enough for the good work that you do, and I'm very grateful that you were able to spend some time with us today, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
I'd love to. Let me give your listeners just some resources on both animal-assisted therapy and on the link between animal abuse and...
We have about a minute.
Violence. Yeah, go to AmericanHumane.org and click on the Human-Animal Bond tab, and you'll see all sorts of tremendous resources there.
Wonderful. Okay.
Also, the Latham Foundation, LATHAM.org.
Mm-hmm.
Great resources there, and back copies of our quarterly newsletter. And then there's also my website, animaltherapy.net, for details about the courses.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Phil, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Renee.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, thank you very much for listening to Thursday in the Doghouse. If you want to hear this program again, please go to my website, jerseydogtrainer.com, and click on the page Renee's Radio Show. The podcast will be up sometime tomorrow. Have a great week, everybody.